Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
All right, guys, Josh Hadley here. Scott's going to be taking a week or two off due to his work schedule and the fact that these episodes are being recorded over the holiday break, so it's difficult for Scott and I to get together. So he's not taking a break because I've driven him nuts or anything. He's just taking a break because recording right now is really, really difficult. So we're going to have a couple of interesting, I won't call them filler episodes because that's not the right way to put it, but after the Adam and Eve promo, I'll let you know what's going on. So go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC, and you get 3 free DVDs, 50% off of a single item, free U.S. shipping, and a free mystery gift. Go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC. Also, at 1201beyond.com, there's also t-shirts you can buy. There's a donate link if you guys want to help out. There's an Amazon wish list. And if you turn your ad blocker off, there are Amazon links that you don't get anything extra, but if you go through those, we get a small cut of whatever you're buying. So if you're going to be buying something from Amazon anyway, might as well use our links, but you don't have to. It doesn't hurt you, doesn't help you, it just helps us, but whatever. All right, so Scott and I live in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Well, I actually live outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin, but you know what I mean. And there's a local radio station. Scott and I both have radio backgrounds. There's a local radio station here that it's actually a pretty cool little rock station. It's called 93.5 The Rock. And it's got a nice mix of music. It's got a couple of people I used to work with at Channel 2 and Channel 26 work there under pseudonyms, which I have issues with, as you guys all know. And I approached them with a unique idea. They were very interested in, after seeing Jackalope, they were very interested in working with Scott and I. And they didn't have any positions open for just like a DJ or anything like that. So I said, well, we're movie nerds, we're pop culture nerds. How about we create like a late night, Saturday night horror host type show for movies for the radio? Where it's, we would go to the movies, go to the movie theater, whatever, see two new movies or a new movie and a new movie that's coming out on video or something. And we review them in kind of an edgy way. And so I guess you could kind of say an audio-only Siskel and Ebert. And they were very interested in this because none of the other stations have this. And because they're primarily a music station, we said we'd also play music and whatnot. So we would review a movie, and then we would play a song, and then we'd review a movie for 10 or 15 minutes, play another song, things like that. Well, they were very interested in this, and so they asked us to cut a demo. Now, that's what you're going to hear here, is the demo that we cut. It's shorter than it would have been if it had been picked up, because it was just a demo. They only wanted about a half hour of material. So the demo is shorter than it was. And Scott and I, we had to come up with a name. We needed something that was mainstream, but also kind of told you what the show was going to be about. So we settled on the, frankly, generic, The Cutting Room Floor. It's not a great title, but it gets the idea across. Because you have to remember, this would be going out to the people of Wisconsin. Your average person who's just listening to the radio on a Friday night or a Saturday night, they're not going to have the movie sophistication that someone like Brad Jones or Mike Robinson would have. So we had to kind of dumb it down a little bit, but as you'll hear, we were not talking down to people. That said, we decided for the first two movies that we'd pick were the just-released CBGBs. I figured music-related, rock station, it makes sense, right? And the just-released-on-video Star Trek Into Darkness, which prior to renting it, Scott had not seen yet. I saw it in the theater, but Scott had not. So we talked about ballpark about 15 minutes on each one. There's a custom opening for Cutting Room Floor, which under the bed music that I used is like the almost something like out of James Horner's Aliens, but whatever. That's what you guys are about to hear. You guys are going to hear the never released cutting room floor demo. Then after that, make sure you stick around because I'm going to have some more information to give you. So this is the cutting room floor.
It sucks!
What do you mean it sucks? It was a damned masterpiece. Why was this movie? Why was it?
I have seen porno movies with better lines and better line deliveries. This is ridiculous!
Yeah, better costuming too. Who cares about the plot? It looked amazing!
I care, and you should care. Here's why.
Let's face it, the best part of this movie probably ended up on the cutting room floor.
Sounds like a slasher movie.
Good evening, everyone. I am Scott Murray.
I am Josh Hadley.
And we just got done watching a movie where the music is the star of the film, CBGB's.
And I'm not 100% sure that that's a good thing for a movie when shouldn't the actors and the story and everything else be the star?
Not when the actors and the story and everything revolve around the music and, an iconic place, the birthplace of punk, CBGB.
Which is also the movie we watch.
Which is also the movie we watch. It's also a club that was in the Bowery of New York and one of the worst areas of New York in the 1970s. And this is a movie that goes through the story of how that club came to be the birthplace of punk and bands.
I'll argue with you that because I don't think, it doesn't play that fast and loose with the facts, but this movie, I didn't like it.
Of course you didn't like it.
I didn't like it. I thought it moved way too fast, for one. It moved way too fast. Because even though the movie is relatively located, it takes place over about a 3-year period. No one changes their hairstyles. Nothing ever changes. Every single character acts exactly. They act like it's the next day, even though in real time it should be 4 or 5 months later.
Well, that's what movies do. They take time and they compress it, and they don't worry. It's just like watching an episode of CSI or something like that. You take time and you compress it in the interest of getting the story out. Plus, I don't think that this was. CBGB is not. It's not a documentary film where they're worried about enacting every little fact. Yeah, they can play a little fast and loose. It's not quite fast and loose as Rock of Ages fast and loose, which is...
I actually felt like at certain parts watching Rock of Ages because of how almost Halloween costume. When you've got the actress playing Blondie and the actors playing the Ramones and Iggy Pop up there, it almost seems like the Halloween version of, we're pretending to be the Ramones. They never came across as, we're supposed to be the Ramones to me.
That's because I don't think that's what the director was going for. And that's my point. I don't think he was going for a recreation. What the director and maybe even the writer at the time, what they were going for was the feel of 1970s New York, the feel of the birth of CBGBs, and it's a piece in that it studies mood. It doesn't really concentrate on character. It doesn't really concentrate on plot all that much, although there's a very quick and loose one surrounding
which
it.
Which we should probably explain a little bit. It's
sure,
it's basically the story. Alan Rickman plays Hilly Crystal. Hilly, not Billy. Hilly Crystal, who is just coming off of his second bankrupt club, and he opens this club for country and bluegrass, and he books the band Television, which is a punk band, and he basically stumbles. In reality, he stumbled into being the godfather of punk, which is something I think this movie completely glosses over, because this movie seems to be more about, this is punk rock, and not why punk rock was so important coming from CBGB's. Just CBGB's created punk and just deal with it.
Until the very end. At the very end, when during the credits of this movie, they show the induction ceremony of Talking Heads into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
where they thank Hilly.
And they thank Hilly, and they have a bunch of other artists that come up and play, obviously, for the induction ceremony that also thank Hilly for their start. And it's summed up really, really nicely in that one when I forget exactly who it was, but they said, thank you, Hilly, for being the only club in New York that allowed people to play original music at the time.
Which, ironically enough, was the fact that he didn't want to pay ASCAP fees. So.
Exactly.
So it was, no, only original music, no covers.
Exactly. And it took off from there, especially since, let's face it, CBGB was not a nice club. Even when it was open later in the years and became a punk landmark, it was never a nice club.
No, and that is one thing that this movie does, is it shows you the sleaze as well as everything else. But where I think the movie failed in almost every level was the script seemed more concerned with, as you pointed, the music than the characters and why the music was happening. But what do you expect when the script is the same person that created the Witchcraft series of softcore horror porn in the late 80s?
Well,
what do you expect?
This is a bit of a step up from that.
Not much, in my opinion.
It is. It is. You're wrong.
And then you've also got the director, who seems far more interested in people stepping in pooey jokes than he is in narrative structure or even capturing the time period. I mean, the time that's passing. He seems more about gags than about this is the next. There were times in this movie where if people didn't say that an event happened 3 days ago, you had no way of knowing. It's daylight out, they're serving a drink. Then there's a scene transition, it's daylight out, they're serving a drink. And they're like, well, 3 days ago, the Ramones played here. That, to me, is bad direction. You don't know how to tell your story sequentially.
See, and to me, again, that was time compression, and the amount of time passing didn't really matter. It was the events that took place and the order in which they took place. It's you're recreating a story, not necessarily every minute of it, but the highlights. And I will agree with you on the pooey jokes. I will agree
way
with you on the
many
there,
of those. Are,
there were, I think we counted, what, six?
Yeah, they just kept, because in real life, Hilly Crystal just let his dog wander around the club and poop wherever he wanted. And the director seemed to be just infatuated with, he stepped in pooey!
Yeah, and then on top of there was kind of a seventh when you have the big burly biker guy lean over and go, and man, clean those bathrooms. He can't even get the words out. Just clean those
bathrooms.
The big
biker guy was Ryan Hurst, by the way. Opie from Sons of Anarchy.
Really?
Who looked exactly like Opie on Sons of Anarchy.
Okay, there you go.
So it was basically Opie's grandfather from the 70s, maybe. Or his dad.
Could be dad, I think, would be accurate.
This is a new movie that you people are probably not going to be able to see until Christmas time. Because this movie, I don't know how they accomplished it, was a DirecTV exclusive. It was a DirecTV on-demand exclusive until Halloween, and then after Halloween, it goes away until its DVD release on December 31st. So we got to see this movie, and it's interesting enough to see. The biggest problem is, I think, outside of the lack of direction, and I mean that both literally and figuratively, Scott, is the fact of they have this weird obsession with subtitles and comic books. And I'm a comic book fan, so that isn't necessarily bad, but every scene transition, it goes to a comic book page with a digital pan, and they even, at some points when people hit walls or whatnot, there's these old 60s Batman-style thwaps and thwoops that get animated on top.
And there was I knew I was in trouble when the very first one, the very first real scene of the movie is Hilly Crystal as a baby escapes from his crib and walks like 2.5 miles. And that's his big introduction to Hilly is as a baby. And they do one of those, you know, zoom out to the panel, zoom over to the next panel. And there just happened to be a cow in the background. And there was a little word thought balloon that popped up next to the cow that just said, Cowabunga Dude.
Yeah, and the whole movie's full of these.
I realize what they're going after. I realize that they're going after the aesthetic and the feel of Punk Magazine back then, which did...
Which is a subplot. The origin of Punk Magazine is actually a subplot in this movie.
Right, and Punk Magazine in the 70s, they did a lot of these comics, and they did a lot of serious storytelling and interviewing in comic form. So I realize that that's the feel they're going for, but if you're going for that feel, tell me the story of Punk Magazine, because frankly,
it's basically a footnote in this movie.
It's really a footnote in this movie, and I found those characters and the interviews that they did with people like Lou Reed and Iggy Pop and
Blondie,
Debbie and a bunch of other folks that they were fascinating, and I would love to learn more.
Well, and then you've also got, you brought up Debbie Harry and Lou Reed and all that. We also have to talk a little bit about the impersonations. I said it felt like, you know, Halloween time, they were just impersonating. Some of them were really close. The Debbie Harry actress, not bad. The actor that played Iggy Pop, not bad. Lou Reed was embarrassing.
Embarrassingly off.
It felt like a really bad Saturday Night Live sketch for 3 minutes.
And yeah, but at the same time, at least they're sticking to the quotes. At least they're sticking to the paper that we have on paper and on record, the things that they said, and they're sticking to that.
Well, but you've also got dealing with, again, I know you think I'm being too picky, and I'm sure the audience does too, but you've got things like Patti Smith singing Because the Night, a song she wouldn't record till 4 years after she played at CBGB's, and that just kind of makes you go, did you even care, or did you just really, really want to get Because the Night in this movie?
I think they went for option B, simply because it's one of those songs that we associate with Patty, and that's the way it is. And again, like you said, not a whole lot of liberties were taken in the story, this obviously being one of them, and one that I don't think deters from the story in any way, shape, or form.
Well, now, you might have noticed we haven't really talked about any of the characters, because most of them aren't characters. They're caricatures. You've got the mean biker with the heart of gold. You've got the really bitchy daughter who is just trying to steer her father into the right place. You've got the mentally deficient bartender. You've got the junkie that just wants to be part of something. None of these characters have any depth whatsoever. They're just there to occasionally make a quip.
Yeah, and you've got the stereotypical 70s New York cop that is willing to bend the rules for a few beers but eventually sees the light.
Yeah, played by Michael Massey, no less. That's the man that killed Brandon Lee.
Yes.
I always find that part really funny.
And then you've got, we mentioned our lead, Alan Rickman, who is playing...
A great actor.
A really good actor. You would know him as, you know, Snape in the Harry Potter series. You would know him as one of his favorite roles that I love him in is the Metatron. From
Are
Dogma.
You completely leaving out Hans Gruber?
Well, yes, Hans Gruber from
Die Hard.
And he's a good actor. And if you look at him and you go, okay, we want you to play kind of an evil British guy, Alan Rickman is your man.
Except Hilly Crystal wasn't British. He still uses the British accent. Yet his daughter sounds like something straight out of a Jersey Shore episode.
Yeah, his daughter has the typical Bowery accent of New York, which is kind of New Jersey-ish because it's not that far off. But and then you've got Alan Rickman, who really
sounds like Alan Rickman. He
sounds a bit like Alan Rickman, but he's kind of channeling the Big Lebowski. He's channeling the dude.
He kind of looks bored, honestly. Alan Rickman kind of looks bored, like he doesn't really, really want to be in this film.
But I will come to his defense in this deal. Okay, Alan Rickman is one of those actors that I equate right up there with Sean Connery. Sean Connery, let's face it, in Highlander, I'm an Egyptian playing a Spaniard, played by a Scotsman. I sound like this. And then... You know, now I'm a Russian submarine commander, and you
I've
deal
seen him
it.
As an Arab prince in the Arab conspiracy.
Yes, and he uses
the same accent
throughout. He doesn't bother with his voice, Alan Rickman is the same way, and he's got that delivery. And you're right. This one, if you've seen the modern version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where he plays or he voices,
I think this is the Marvin I think this Martian. Is the man that built that robot.
Yeah, it really.
At any moment, I expected him to go.
But again, I'm giving him a pass on that one, and for the same reason that I give Sean Connery a pass for making Zardoz. It just, you needed the paycheck, and it's what you do.
Well, before we go to break, would you recommend this movie? Because I personally would say see it to see it, but it's not very good. So my recommendation is, eh.
Your recommendation is see it, but don't really enjoy it? Is that what you're saying?
No, my recommendation is see it, but I doubt you're going to enjoy it. But you should see it just to know that I'm not wrong.
See, and I say see it, understand what it is, enjoy the music, enjoy the caricatures, but don't expect, you know, historical fact to play through. Now, what have we got coming up for the break? Because I absolutely adore
this stuff. Before we go to commercial, one of the bands that got their start at CBGB's was this little band called Generation X. You might not recognize the name, but you'll recognize the singer. Just pay attention.
The Greyhound's rocking out tonight to Maximum Rockabilly. When two punks choose to risk the subway for a tube to Piccadilly. Whose efforts stir fast gangs for glory, another dumb casualty. Having fun in Salva 6, a hit of flick knife flicks. Oh, kiss me deadly tonight. Another battle was won and lost down the Bishop's End last night. The spotlights picked the kids in triumph with a thousand scars in flight. See how they black and white, young and old, here to fight. Having fun in Silver Six with violence for a fix. Kiss me. Dead. conflicts with violence for a fix. Discovers teenage sex. Try shooting up our kids. Oh, this game. Debbie.
What else did we see? Because I still can't quite grasp everything that happened in
our second movie.
I'm a little motion sick because of it.
And we saw Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh man, yeah. Anybody with motion sickness issues, give this one a pass. It's
not as bad as Blue Crush. I worked at a movie theater when Blue Crush came out, that surfing movie,
yes,
with Kate Boswell.
Yes.
People were getting motion sick because of all the underwater photography that was attached to, like, surfboards throughout 90% of that movie.
And Cloverfield. The same thing was happening with Cloverfield. People were leaving the theater because of the shaky handheld look of the whole thing.
And for whatever reason, directors seem to think that shaky cam, where you don't need to see what's going on, adds tension and excitement, and I disagree with that.
It does in short bursts, and they did it well in the space scenes of Firefly. It was, okay, here's a big wide view of what's going on, and what's that little speck over there? Zoop! Oh, it's the Firefly.
I don't like digital zooms to begin with, but...
Right, but in Into Darkness, I don't think they had a single Steadicam operator there, or if they did, then in post they digitally took away the Steadicam.
Knowing J.J. Abrams, that's a possibility, because Star Trek Into Darkness did not do well with Star Trek fans. It's weird. This is kind of like the Star Trek 4 of the original franchise.
Right.
Because the original franchise, Star Trek 4, is the most non-Star Trek accessible. You don't really need to know a lot about Star Trek to jump right into the Voyage Home. Ironically enough, it capping off the previous two movies, heavy in continuity, and people don't even wonder, why is the Enterprise not in Star Trek 4? Who cares? They're on a Klingon ship. Just deal with it.
Just go with it.
But this one, Into Darkness did not do well with Trekkies or science fiction fans, but did really, really great with your average non-science fiction fan. I think that says something.
It certainly says something when you've got a series and a history as rich as Star Trek has. I like the fact that in 2009, when they redid Star Trek, it at least gave it was an out. It was this is a new universe, new continuity.
New rules.
We're moving along with new rules. But if you're going to continue to remake films in the series, and here's the big surprise if you haven't seen it, spoiler warnings ahead, this is The Wrath of Khan.
Which J.J. Abrams promised he was not remaking.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a remake of Wrath of Khan with a couple of ha-ha moments.
The movie is basically a disaster, Scott.
It really is.
It's a disaster on every level. The script makes no sense. They have so many things that make a third movie completely impossible.
Both necessary and impossible at the same time. Because they didn't finish the story in any way, shape, or form.
But they also had such a MacGuffin in this. There's spoilers here. But at one point, Kirk dies.
Yes.
And then they use Khan's blood, since he's a super soldier, to bring him back to life, which they've then synthesized. So at the end of this movie, they have basically cured death.
Yeah.
Basically, there's no more death in Star Trek.
I will be positive on one thing. There is one thing that I noticed. Now, if you saw the 2009 Star Trek, it is jokingly called Lens Flare the Movie, because you've got scenes where the star or the sun is positioned behind the camera, and you still get this big lens flare right into it, which makes absolutely no sense. This one, he at least calmed down on the lens flares.
Yeah, he did. J.J. Abrams directed this one. He kind of wanted it to be... He wanted it to be more accessible to the public, which clearly it was, but he wanted to please Star Trek fans, which clearly he didn't. So in this Star Trek, I don't think we need to go into the plot. It's Star Trek, and it's a remake of Wrath of Khan. You people, you know what it basically is. I will say, Benedict Cumberbatch owned his role as John Harrison slash Khan Noonien Singh.
Now, I have enjoyed Benedict Cumberbatch. I discovered him in the BBC Sherlock series, where he plays Sherlock Holmes and does an excellent job. And as an actor, I've really enjoyed his work. And to see him hit the big screen and to hit a hit over here on the States.
To be fair, though, he is chewing scenery like crazy. My name is Khan. Yeah. You just go, Jesus, are you sure you don't want something to wash that scenery down with?
A bit, but everybody in this movie is chewing scenery. Everyone. Even logical Spock somehow chews. He takes Kirk's line of Khan. You know, the
I like how your voice cracked there. That was subtle.
That's if you're listening to Zachary Quinto's voice, it does the same thing. But you know, he takes the big Khan line, and everyone in this movie chews scenery. I honestly can't remember the name of the guy that plays Kirk, because who cares? But the guy that plays Kirk chews up scenery. In his scenes where he's running through engineering and doing his goofy Scotty thing, Scotty is chewing up scenery. For his one-line quips, which this is another thing that makes me angry about this current track of Star Trek movies, but for his one-line quips and his few things, Bones chews up scenery. Uhura chews scenery in this movie. They all deliver their lines as if they are the most intense things in the entire world.
Which may be why the mainstream audiences kind of moved to this, do you think?
I don't know. But, I mean, Kirk, even when he's hitting on a woman in a bar... hello there. Could I have your phone number? You're very attractive. You know, it's insane.
Well, and the movie is overlong. It's way overproduced.
Yes.
It's if you think about it for 5 seconds after you're done, even if you're a non-Trekkie, you're going to go, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense.
The plot holes catch up to it.
You start to realize just how poorly written this film is. And then when you, to me, you shouldn't be surprised. This was written by the same guy that wrote Transformers and Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Oof.
What did you expect?
Ooh, yeah.
Did you expect a real thespian, deep, multi-layered film out of that guy?
And it's a shame, because the original Wrath of Khan is such a character-driven drama. It really is.
Yes, it is. And this is more, we have to give each character their little moment, even though none of them feel special. This is very much a Kirk-Spock movie.
Yeah, and that's
where everyone else gets sidelined for Kirk and Spock's storyline. And to me, always with classic Trek, anything, they are the two least interesting characters on the crew.
They always have been. I will give them credit. They didn't try the Scotty Uhura thing that the original Trek movies tried and failed miserably at. But at least I think in the original Treks, Bones, he got his due. Scotty got his due. Uhura, she got her fan dance. But in this one, yes, it is Kirk and Spock, Kirk, Spock, Kirk, Spock. Nobody else matters. They're just there for comic relief, or as they're almost cast MacGuffins to move the plot along,
yeah,
including Benedict Cumberbatch, which is a shame.
Well, and then we also have to point out one of the other big actors in this was Peter Weller as the the true villain.
Which everybody and their brother knows is RoboCop.
Yeah, Peter Weller is the true villain of this piece as Admiral Marcus, and he really does sell it, because Peter Weller's got a presence.
Yeah.
You know, he's got this evil, you think he can kick you in the nuts from the other side of the galaxy.
Yes.
You don't dispute when he says that.
Yes. Yes, he does an excellent job. Let's face it, it was nearly the same in the original, Wrath of Khan. It's the same here. The villains are the ones that shine. The villains are the ones that are memorable.
Yeah. And, but like we said, this movie, okay, my recommendation is, if you haven't seen it and you're a Star Trek fan, see it just for completion's sake, or even see it on a, well, is it worse than Star Trek V? I'm not sure. Find out for yourself. If you're a non-Star Trek fan, give it a shot, because you probably will like it.
Yeah, and I would stick to something along the same lines, but the only recommendation I have on top of that is, everyone, Star Trek fan or not, do yourself a favor. Go into the classic section of the video store or wherever you get your movies these days. Get the original Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Get the original Star Trek IV. And
hey, I liked Star Trek III, too.
Star Trek
II, III, and IV are one continuous story.
That's
so
true.
You want to see all three of those in order.
Okay, then get II, III, and IV. Sit down, watch those, and just so you have an understanding of how, what in my opinion, a real Trek story is done. This is in-your-face action, popcorn-chewing blah. This is not Star Trek.
I actually thought at one point I was going to have a CGI gasm. It was so bad. That's what it looked like. Someone just had a CGI gasm all over the theater screen.
And we've got Avatar 2 to look forward to.
On that note, I've been Josh Hadley.
I've been Scott Murray.
And you are listening to The Cutting Room Floor on 93.5.
The Rock. And as always, I'm right.
Eh. So that was The Cutting Room Floor. Whether you liked it, whether you hate it, it was still probably something interesting to listen to. Now, that said, 93 Rock passed on it. And one of their reasonings were, we talked too much and that you're a rock station. And I say, all right, I can see that, except for the fact that you run The Sixth Sense with Nikki Sixx, which sometimes they've got 10, 15 straight minutes of talking between songs, just like we did. You run Bob and Tom in the Morning. Again, sometimes up to 25 minutes of straight talk with no music. So I don't buy this whole, oh, it was too much talk and not enough music thing. So I think there were some other things at play here. But this is what I want you guys to do. I want you guys, because they have, 93 Rock has one of those streaming things, where doesn't matter where you are in the world, you'd be able to listen to whatever's on 93 Rock. So even though Scott and I would be doing this regionally, you guys would all be able to listen to it on whatever time slot it was in. All right? Now, that said, since they passed, the person I was dealing with was a guy named Jason Hillary. He was nice enough. I'm not bitching about him. And I also talked to his boss, but his name escapes me at the moment. So here's what I want you guys to do. Their website is 93rockon.com. What I want you to do is go there. I want you to email them. Tell them that you heard the Cutting Room Floor pilot and you very much would like them to pick it up. Now, be nice. Don't be like, oh, you fucking assholes. How did you not pick this up? Just tell them that you, no matter where you are, you would listen and you would support the advertisers that would be on the show if they hired Scott and I. There's also their phone number, 920-435-3771, for their business line, and ask for Jason Hillary. He's the one I was dealing with. There's also Jason's email address, jason.hillary, H-I-L-L-E-R-Y, at mwcradio.com. mwcradio.com. Email Jason. Call the station. use the email link, the contact us link on 93rockon.com and tell them that you would listen to this show if it were a regular thing, if it were, even if it wasn't a monthly thing, or even if it wasn't a weekly thing, I mean, even if it was just a monthly thing, that you'd listen to this. Because personally, I think that that regional radio has become so entrenched into itself that it's boring. Contact us at 1201beyond@gmail.com or lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com. Let us know what the local radio is like in your area. Because in this area, it's the same rock songs. It's the same boring prattle. There's rarely anything different. That's why 93 Rock stuck out. Because they were playing 80s hair metal next to Nine Inch Nails, next to Ministry, next to Godsmack. That we didn't really hear in this area. So I myself was very, very eager to get hired at 93 Rock. And then when I found out that on air, they're known as the Hammer and Sarah Marks, two people I worked with under different names. I knew them under their real names, but I'm not going to out them in case they don't want to be outed. Worked there. I thought, you know what? This would be a pretty cool place to work. Scott and I both have radio backgrounds. We've been doing this shit. I mean, Christ, with all the 1201 Beyond stuff, I've got over 500 episodes between all of the shows. And that's just in a little under 3 years. So as spooky as that is, I've got tons of radio experience. Scott has tons of radio experience. And that's the interesting part. We would be good commodities. There's you guys, I'm sure a lot of you guys would listen to us on 93 Rock Stream if we were on their station. And that's why I want you guys to stage a little PR campaign for us. Maybe this is self-serving. Maybe it's sleazy. I don't know. Scott signed off on it, so I'm not going behind his back on this. But what we need you guys to do is email them, call them. Again, that's jason.hillary@mwcradio.com and the phone number 920-435-3771. Tell them that you would support this show. And again, I cannot stress this enough. Be nice. Be concise. Do not call names. Do not call them idiots. Jason Hillary was not a jackass to me or anything, so there's been no personal slight or anything like that. Just help us out. Help us get hired at 93 Rock. And if you didn't like the show, then tell them that too. Just say, yeah, I see why you guys didn't pick this up. It was dull. It was boring. No one cares about Star Trek or how stupid it got. No one cares about this CBGB movie that, at the time of this recording, is not even available on DVD. And also, I want feedback from you. You guys. We made this demo. I'm used to, from working in TV, I'm used to calling it a pilot. But it's a demo. What did you guys think? I want to know. 1201beyond@gmail.com. Let me know what you thought of the demo. Let me know if you thought we prattled on too long. Let me know if you thought Jason was right, that we just talked too long and it was kind of dry. I thought Scott and I mean, you guys know Scott and I have a good chemistry, but I thought we brought up good points and we tackled it like film critics, although, you know, obviously we let our personal biases influence us, as, you know, that's what criticism kind of is, really, is your own personal bias towards a product of media. But I want to hear whether you guys thought that this should have worked. That, to me, something else had to be going on. Because Jason and the boss above his head, whose name I can't remember, they were very gung-ho for the idea. They thought, no one else in the market has this. That it's very much like a satellite radio thing, and to be able to get that for a local over-the-air station, that was a big coup. That's one of the words the guy used with me. And then he saw the Jackalope website, and he was very intrigued, and then he saw the stuff that Scott and I are doing, and he knew we kind of had a built-in fan base. And Scott and I are both, you know, we both live here, so we're locals. And they were very excited. And then the funny thing was, when we recorded it the following week, because we had to watch the movies and acquire them and whatnot, I edited it together, and then it was like silence. It was like pulling teeth. They didn't even get back to me right away. I had to send Jason probably 7 emails and a couple of voicemails before he got back to me with the, oh, there was just too much talk. Sorry, we don't see a place for it on our station right now. And I thought, okay, something's going on here. Not only did his tone abruptly change, but the fact that all how gung-ho they were. I mean, maybe they just hated it. You know, it could be as simple as that. It could be once they heard it, they thought, this was a good idea, but these guys fucking suck. It could be that. It could be something else. It could be maybe they looked us up and found that, hey, Josh says lots of inappropriate things on the internet, and he'd probably get us in trouble. We don't want to be part of this. If so, fair enough. I mean, I can't really blame him for that, in all honesty. Or he might have looked it up and thought that Scott sounded too much like Brad Jones, although I'm sure they haven't heard of Brad Jones, or anything like that. So that's the issue here, guys. You guys need to let us know, because Scott and I are obviously too close to this, so let us know what you think. And because we're dealing with radio, I'm going to be plunking in a song or two after this, because, like I said, it's not a filler episode, but there's not a whole lot more I can say about it, and since I'm flying solo, I don't have anyone to bounce ideas off of, so what it comes down to is just let us know. 1201beyond@gmail.com, 1201beyond.com. Buy a t-shirt, use the links, go to Adam and Eve, and please let us know about the cutting room floor, whether it should have been cut or not. Have a good night, guys.
We'll be right back.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.